All right, so my name is Meg Pancook. I'm here with Jack Gillily on, this is March 19th, 2011 in Anaconda, Montana. Could you just state your name and where and when you were born for me?
My name is Jack Gillily, spelled G-I-L-L-U-L-Y. I was born 1938 in Glasgow, Montana, which is up in the northeast corner of the state. I went to high school there, graduated from high school in 1956, went into the Army, went to school at Northern Montana College at Havre for 1 year, and then graduated from the University of Montana in 1961, actually 1962, because it took me 5 years, so I actually graduated in 1962. I've worked on newspapers in Montana, in Glasgow, Missoula, Helena, Shelby, in Anaconda. And after that, I changed careers and worked at Montana Power Company in Butte for 20 years, from 1977 until 1996, actually 19 years. I wrote a Gillily family history back in the 1980s and 1990s. Carol typed it. It runs about, 250 pages. Has a lot of Irish history in it and a lot of detail. Probably too much detail for you.
Never.
The Gillily name started in Ireland. The Gillilys came to America in 1818 and landed in Boston Harbor. Mm-hmm. Now, some of this is just purely supposition, but they lived in Boston for a while. They lived in New York for a while. They lived in Rhode Island for a while. Then they went back to New York. Then they lived in Michigan, Kansas, Missouri, and finally Montana.
Wow.
There have been six generations of Gillilys in America. My son would be, no, wait a minute, I'm the fifth. My son would be the sixth generation in America. The family is spread out all over the country. Everywhere, California, Idaho, Arizona, Tennessee, North Carolina, Missouri.
Missoula,
okay. What more should we talk about?
Well, I think, do you know anything about how they came to live in Montana and when possibly that was that they moved out here?
Yeah, my grandfather, John Gillily, left Missouri in 1901.
Okay. And what was his name again?
His name was John Gillily.
John, okay.
And he was a newspaper man.
Okay.
And he left his family in Missouri Now, there's quite a story there. The story is that he got drunk, got involved in a poker game, won a bunch of money, took the money and walked down to the railroad station and told the railroad agent in charge, "Give me a ticket out west. I don't care where I go, just give me a ticket to someplace out west." So the railroad agent supposedly gave him a ticket to Billings, Montana. And he got on the train, and he had no idea, the story goes, where he was going. And anyway, he arrived in Billings in 1901, and he started a newspaper called the Billings Evening Journal.
Okay.
Now, the Billings Evening Journal eventually became the Billings Gazette. So my grandfather was one of the founders of the Billings Gazette newspaper in Billings, Montana. There were 8 or 10 people that came together to form that newspaper. But anyway, he was one of them. And after that, he served on a number of newspapers. He didn't serve, he actually founded a number of newspapers in Montana. And I'll read a list here.
Sure.
From 1910 to 1923, he owned and edited the Columbus News in Columbus, Montana, the Dawson County Review in Glendive, Montana, the Forsyth Times Journal in Forsyth, Montana, and the Fergus County Argus in Lewistown, Montana. Then he ended his career as publisher of a banker's newspaper in Great Falls, Montana. In 1916, he served as president of the Montana State Press Association. He died in 1936. That was my grandfather, John Gillooly. An interesting story about John. He supposedly played poker with Charlie Russell in a bar in Gray Falls.
Okay.
And my dad asked him one time, "Well, how come you didn't get any paintings from Charlie Russell?" And supposedly my grandfather said, "Well, we just thought he was another drunken cowboy." And so anyway, that's my grandfather was a heavy drinker, supposedly an alcoholic, but he was a functional alcoholic. But anyway, he had a lot of newspaper friends around Montana. Where should we go from here?
Well, wherever you'd like, but I do have a couple questions for you. Do you know what he did you said he moved to Montana from Michigan?
Missouri.
Okay.
What year?
No, do you know what he did when he was living in Missouri?
Oh, in Missouri, yeah. He was editor of a newspaper in Trenton, Missouri. T-R-E-N-T-O-N.
Okay.
He was the editor of that news. He was also the justice of the peace in that community. Before that, he had lived in Kansas, in a little town called Oskaloosa, Kansas.
Okay.
There were something like nine or ten brothers and sisters, and they farmed in Kansas, in a little town. I mentioned, did I say Oskaloosa? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oskaloosa, how do you spell it, Carol?
I think it's Oskaloosa. I think it's got a
Oskaloosa. K. Oskaloosa?
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, there were at least eight or nine people in that family. Let me look in the history here.
Sure. And so he was born in Kansas, your grandfather.
No, he is was, that correct? He was born in Michigan.
In Michigan. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we stop for just a minute?
Oh, sure. Here, I'll pause it. Go ahead.
Okay, we're talking about John Gillooly.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Michigan.
Okay.
And there were nine brothers and sisters. John was born in 1859.
Okay.
And he was born in Clinton, like President Clinton,
mm-hmm.
Michigan.
Okay.
Do you want me to list all the brothers and sisters? Or?
Sure, if you have them.
Okay, there was William.
Okay.
In that family in Michigan, there was William, born 1846. Robert Emmett, born 1848. Marion Eliza, born 1850. Maria Isabel, born 1852. Charles Elijah, born 1855. Margaret Rosanna, born 1857. John Adam, my grandfather, born 1859. James Henry, born 1861. And George Carney, born 1864. Wow. They lived in three different towns in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton, Adrian, and I'm trying to remember the third one. The family, I believe, ended up in Adrian, Michigan.
Adrian.
During the Civil War.
Mm.
Now, I believe it was in Adrian where the family got involved in the Civil War. There was a brother there named William Gillooly.
A brother of your great-grandparents?
A brother of my I'm getting ahead of myself.
No worries.
A brother of my, it was a brother of my grandfather.
Okay. William Francis.
And he served in the Civil War and got killed in the Battle of Fredericksburg. Mm-hmm. Now, there was another brother I can't quite remember his name, who was injured in the Civil War.
Mm.
The point I'm getting at is that the family was thoroughly disgusted with the Civil War, plus the fact some family members had died from diseases like diphtheria and smallpox.
Mm.
The family got thoroughly disgusted with living in Michigan because one son had been killed, one had been injured, several other relatives had died.
Mm.
So the reason they moved from from Michigan to Kansas is to get rid of their thoughts and their actions about the Civil War. So they settled on a little farm. The entire family settled on a little farm near Oskaloosa, Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah, there is no K in it. I was mispronouncing it.
Oh, thank you. Oskaloosa. We're, okay.
The reason
it's only 1,100 people now, so that's been pretty tight.
We're trying to figure out how to spell Oskaloosa. And we finally right found here. It.
We got Oskaloosa.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carol. Do you know when they were living in Michigan, did your family also farm there, or were they doing something else?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they were farmers.
Farmers.
In Adrian, Michigan.
Okay.
But also... Tom Gillooly, who came from Ireland, was a cooper.
Hmm.
Now, a cooper is a person who makes wooden barrels.
Okay.
And not only wooden barrels, but also wooden receptacles. Everything today is made out of cardboard and plastic and ceramics. But back in those days, everything was made out of wood. If you had a container, it was made out of wood. And a cooper made it. Spell like Gary Cooper. Now, a cooper, and it was a real skill to be to make a wooden barrel. And I won't get into that in any detail, but a cooper was a very valuable and skilled person on the frontier.
Why is that?
Because everything was stored in barrels. You know, we didn't have plastic, we didn't have ceramics, we didn't have cardboard. We had wood. Everything was stored in a wooden barrel at that time. So a cooper was a very valuable and skilled person on the frontier.
And that would be Tom came over in 1818, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tom Gillooly came over, and his wife, Rosanna, came over in 1818.
And they were married when they came over here?
Mm-hmm. They were married. Mm-hmm.
And was he a cooper also in Ireland, or do you
Yes, know? Okay. He was a cooper in Ireland too. Thomas, who would be my great grandfather. We're going backwards.
No,
we should have started and went frontwards, but we're going backwards.
It's a good way to go. Do you know where they came from in Ireland?
Well, there's great debate on that. James Gillooly was a famous geologist. He claimed that the family came from County Galway, and or perhaps County Roscommon.
Roscommon?
R-O-S and then common.
Okay. C-O-N. Perfect.
We're looking at a map of Ireland. This is County Galway right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, County Roscommon is right there.
Okay.
Now, as I study Irish history, I also find some Gillooly's in County Sligo.
Okay.
Up there.
Okay.
Now, no, not County Sligo.
Mm-hmm.
County Leitrim.
Leitrim.
But there's a Galooly Tavern that somebody found in County Sligo. So they lived in this area. These are called the border counties of Ireland. See, let me get over there.
Sure.
This is North Ireland right here.
Mm-hmm.
And these are called the border counties.
Okay.
Right here.
That's the western side of...
The western side of Ireland, mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you look very carefully in County Leitrim, you'll find a Mac Galooly right there.
Hmm.
M-A-C. It's actually Mac Galooly. So we know that the Galoolys came from either County Sligo, County Leitrim, County Roscommon, or County Galway, somewhere in this area.
Hmm.
Now there's an interesting story about the derivation of the name, and it's all supposition.
Mm-hmm.
Two Galooly brothers got in a fight in an Irish tavern. A very vicious fight. They apparently didn't like each other, or else they were drunk. And the Galooly brother who won the battle bit off the ear of the other Galooly brother. And the Galooly brother who won the fight said to the Galooly brother who lost the fight, "I'll be goddamned if I'm going to have the same name as you." So the Galooly brother who lost the fight changed his name to Galooly. And I've been with a family of losers ever since. Now, whether that story is true or not, who knows?
That's a good one.
It's been handed down in the family, you know, for years. And it could be it's an urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are other stories too about the Galoolys or the Galoolys in Ireland, and there's a dozen different varieties of the name. There's another story that the name Galooly originated in Italy. And it was spelled G-I-L-L-U-L-I. And that there was a father Galooly in Italy that came to Ireland with St. Patrick, the man who Christianized Ireland, the man who drove the snakes out of Ireland, supposedly. And, okay, this would go back to what, the 1100s or the 1200s, somewhere in that area. And in other words, Father Galooly was a friend of St. Patrick. Now, whether that story has any validity, I have no idea. But it's a fun story. And regardless of whether these stories have any truth, we keep telling them. You know, we hope they're right. Yeah. Okay, Galooly in Gaelic means son of the glutton.
Son of the glutton.
Either Galooly or Galooly means son of the glutton or son of the servant who belongs to the glutton. Anyway, there's all kinds of Gaelic translations and all kinds of Gaelic meanings to the name. I can go into some of that if you want me to.
Sure.
Can you turn it off for just a minute?
Yep. And go ahead.
Okay, the name Galooly goes back to the 1400s when Gilhoolies were Catholic parish priests in County Leitrim. So we've established now that the name came from County Leitrim, at least at one time. It was there. Okay, the name was Mac Gilhooly. Mac meant the father of. You're aware of that probably. And okay, there was, and it was pronounced Mac Gilhooly Gilhooly. Or I'm not sure I got the pronunciation correct there. It meant descent from the father, a follower of the shoulder. Okay, that translated into big shoulders like the old man. Okay, well, here's a little bit more of that. Now, this information was given to me by a man named George Gilhooly, who lives in Issaquah, Washington. I'm not sure I'm related to him, but anyway, he gave me this information. And it says, the father of Gilhooly, or Mac Gilhooly, as it was first anglicized, has been prominent in Leitrim and Roscommon since records have been kept. They were parish priests at Giltoggert, County Leitrim, between 1461 and 1505. Teg McGilgully of Granite County, Langford, was a transplantee to County Connacht in 1657. Well, it goes on and on, telling about the Gaelic history of Gilhoolies. But I don't know how much detail you want.
Oh,
it gets
great.
Sort of boring, really. And I can keep going. We mentioned County Leitrim as a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, other relatives claim that we came from County Cork. I don't think that's correct. Let me keep going through this stuff here.
Sure. So you're not too sure whether or not Tom Gilhooly came from Galway or from Cork, or do you know that he came from Galway?
I'm pretty certain I'm pretty certain that my branch of the family came from Galway or Roscommon.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I say that is because James Gilhooly, who was my dad's cousin, said that.
Okay.
And James Gilhooly was a pretty intelligent and a pretty reliable man. He was a very famous geologist. He taught at UCLA and Harvard and places like that. So I'm almost certain that we came from Galway or Roscommon, but I can't prove it.
Do you know anything about their lives in Ireland before they came over? Have you had any stories at all passed down to you about that? Or
yeah,
have you discovered anything?
Yeah, the man who was my great-great-grandfather was Tom Gilhooly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Thomas Galluli, supposedly, again, we can't verify it, was an Irish rebel. Tom Galluli was given a choice, either leave Ireland or be hanged. Well, if you want to put some humor into it, I'm sure glad he chose the first one, because I wouldn't be here. So apparently Thomas Galluli and his wife, Rosanna. Thomas and Rosanna left Ireland in 1818. And we've gone through that before. So.
Did they have any children before or when they left, or did they have them all here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think they did.
All in the U.S.?
Let's stop it for a minute.
Sure. Ready. Go ahead.
Okay. A genealogical researcher in Michigan sent me this information. And this information comes from the 1850 Michigan census.
Okay.
It shows seven Galulis resided near Brighton, Michigan. Brighton, Brighton, Michigan. That was the third city in Michigan that they lived in. Okay, here are the seven Galulis. And most of them were born in Ireland. Thomas Galluli, age 64, born in Ireland. Rosanna Galluli, age 64, born in Ireland. John Galluli, age 26, born in Boston. James Galluli, age 23, born in Boston. Margaret Galluli, age 28, born in Ireland. Elvira Galluli, and now Elvira could have been a wife of one of the Galulis, age 22, born in New York. Henry Galluli, age 2, born in Michigan.
So which one was the one that you mentioned, that Margaret Galluli was born in Ireland as well?
Yeah.
Would she have been Thomas and Rosanna's daughter? Mm-hmm. Or okay.
She was Thomas and Rosanna's daughter, I believe.
I know that they had some in the United States, and then she went back to Ireland, and then they're all back in the United States.
Okay, Margaret Galluli has been listed as being born in Ireland, when in fact, if she is the daughter of Thomas and Rosanna, she had to have been born in the United States.
Okay. Because did they ever go back to Ireland then, or
no.
Thomas and Rosanna?
No,
they stayed
no.
here. Okay.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
See, there was a lot of oppression and repression in Ireland. Mm-hmm. You're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they left Ireland was because of that oppression from the English, and that oppression from the English. Plus the fact it was a dreary life in Ireland. You know, you had trouble, you know, there wasn't a lot of money, there wasn't a lot of food, the weather was bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a bad place to live in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get out of there, you know, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the English were punishing the Irish people, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
Next question.
Do you know much about their journey over? You said that they came into Boston Harbor. Mm-hmm. Do you know much about their journey over there, or possibly their journey from Boston and how they made it out to Michigan in the 1850s?
Yeah, okay. We covered that once before. They lived in Boston, then they lived in New York, then they lived in what's that, the other state?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. Then they went back to New York. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm pretty sure they took the Erie Canal. The Erie Canal starts in northern New York and goes to Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they took that canal in the 1830s. Now when they got to Lake Erie, I think they took a steamboat from Lake Erie into Michigan. I can't prove that, but I think maybe that's what happened. Next question.
Do you have any knowledge of why they moved around so much in the Boston and New York area, what they were possibly doing for a living out there before they came over?
Well, I can give a bunch of supposition or conjecture that the reason they moved is because of the reason that so many Americans moved westward. They thought that there were greener pastures. The further west they went, they believed they could do better economically and socially. It's called manifest destiny. And manifest destiny basically is a movement of people from the eastern United States to the western United States. And so they kept moving west, and because they figured they could better themselves economically. And next question.
Let's see, do you have any knowledge of how your grandparents came to meet? That'd be John Galluli and then your grandmother. Do you have any stories about that? Anything past that?
Yeah, my great-grandmother, well, wait a minute. We're talking about my grandparents now,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, my grandparents are John Galluli. Mm-hmm. And Hannah Galluli, H A.
H-A-N-N-A-H.
H-A-N-N-A-H. Hannah Galluli and John Galluli, husband and wife, were married in 1907 in Livingston, Montana. Hannah came from Red Oak, Iowa, and she came out to Montana in the early part of the century to work on newspapers. She was a typesetter on newspapers, and she met my grandfather, John, in Billings. In fact, she worked for him as a typesetter on a newspaper in Billings. And they were married in 1907 in Livingston. Had their honeymoon in Helena at the Grand Hotel, which is a building now near on Lawrence Street in Helena, now torn down, it burned down. They lived in all those cities that I mentioned.
That he worked for newspapers and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know if Hannah Galluli was also of Irish descent or?
No, she was Swedish.
Swedish. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You see my yellow and white hair. Mm-hmm. That's the Swedish gene.
And so they moved kind of all over in Montana during mm-hmm. their lives. Where would this be your father's parents or your mother's?
My father's parents. Yeah.
So where was your dad born?
My dad was born in Billings in 1908.
Okay.
He was the only child of that marriage of John and Hannah. Although he had half brothers in Missouri. So this was a second marriage for John. And John and Hannah, Hannah died in 1959 in Great Falls, Montana.
Okay.
John Galluli died in 1936 in Great Falls, Montana.
Mm.
Hannah died in 1959.
In Great Falls as well.
She was the only grandmother I knew.
Mm.
What's the name of that religion? She was a religious freak.
Was it Seventh-day Adventist?
No. But anyway, she didn't
Christian Scientist.
Christian Scientist,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She didn't believe in going to doctors.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Do you have any, did she have kind of like her own cures for ailments and stuff? Do you remember any of those things?
No. But I remember my dad getting very upset because she wouldn't take her medicine.
Mm.
The Christian Scientists don't believe in medicine. They don't believe in doctors. And my dad would get so upset and concerned because she wouldn't take her medicine. Yeah. Anyway, she died of a heart attack. So.
And so your father was born in Billings, Montana,
mm-hmm.
and then you were born in Glasgow, Montana.
Yes.
How did your parents come to live in Glasgow?
Well, they were both my dad, Sam Galluli, and my mother, Esther Galluli, were students at the University of Montana. They both graduated from UM 1930.
Is that where they met, or did?
Yeah, they met at Missoula.
Okay.
Yeah, they got married in the First Congregational Church in Missoula, a building that is still there. Then they lived. My dad worked on the Great Falls Tribune for about 2 years. In 1932, he moved to Glasgow, where he became editor of the Glasgow Courier in 1932. That's a date that's fairly important because in 1933, President Roosevelt authorized the building of Fort Peck Dam in eastern Montana. And my dad was on the original committee in Glasgow to plan the building of Fort Peck Dam. Fort Peck Dam is the largest earth-filled dam in America. And it's 4 miles long, it's 250 feet high. During the Depression, there were 11,000 people building that dam in Fort Peck, Montana. But anyway, as a journalist, he got to cover that entire period of that dam being built from 1933 to it was dedicated in 1948 by President Truman. But anyway, he got to cover that entire period when Fort Peck Dam was being built. And now he stayed there, my dad stayed there in Glasgow until 1959. In 1959, he moved to Helena and became publications editor of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. From 1959 to 1966, he was in that job with the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Then in 1966, he was appointed to be the head of the Montana Historical Society in Helena. He was appointed by Governor Judge, Governor Tom Judge. And he held that job to 1974. In 1974, he became the secretary manager of the Montana Newspaper Association. He held that job until 1984. My mother died in 1982. Now, she was equally important in the family. She was a journalist too, and she put out the State of Montana Republican newsletter. She was an editor of Supreme Court journals.
Red Cross. She did a lot of work for the Red Cross.
She did a lot of voluntary work for the American Red Cross in Glasgow and in Helena. Next question.
Seems as though your family has had quite a history within like the journalism and newspaper business here in Montana.
Yes.
Is that a reason why you studied journalism as well, or have you just always kind of had a passion for
it? Yeah, it was in our blood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it we grew up with it. Mm. And I started working on newspapers when I was 15 years old.
Wow. Would that be in Glasgow?
In Glasgow, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I lied about my age. You were supposed to be 15 before you could start work. I was 14. Uh-oh. I think the boss knew that. I was a printer's devil. You know what a printer's devil is?
I don't.
A printer's devil does all the dirty work on newspapers. You sweep the floors, you clean up the mess, you melt metal,
Well, they don't do any of that anymore, but...
Yeah. You make deliveries. You put things together. You read proof as the linotype operators were setting the type, then you would read the proof of the news story and make corrections. Yeah. like I said, after that I went to high school and college, continued to work on newspapers. Mm-hmm. Next question.
So was Thomas Gallooly the first kind of writer in your family history, or do you know of anybody else?
No, Thomas Gallooly was a farmer.
Okay.
And a cooper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. How about, I'm sorry, excuse my misstep.
John Gallooly was the first.
Okay.
Was the first newspaper man.
In your family.
In the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and that would be your grandfather.
That was John. My grandfather, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Getting names mixed up, I'm sorry. Great. Do you have any kind of childhood memories of Glasgow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I was born in 1938, which was the middle of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had any money, you know, you lived in squalor. Mm-hmm. You know, you were very poor, and you lived in a rental house. You ate a lot of macaroni. you raised a big garden. Whatever kind of work you could get, you immediately did. And I started selling newspapers at the age of 11.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers raised rabbits, and the reason they raised rabbits was to, you could sell the hair. You took an electric razor and took the hair off the rabbits, and then you sold the rabbit hair.
Mm.
And what did they use rabbit hair for? Coats, hats,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. some other memories. World War II was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, all the young men in Glasgow served in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
There were things like lots of grasshoppers, lots of beetles. You know, during those Depression years, there were all kinds of insects, grasshoppers, beetles, windstorms.
Glasgow is a farming community.
It's yeah, Glasgow.
Out in the prairie. So it's not, I mean, the terrain there versus here is like night and day, you know, because we're in the mountains and that was, like you say,
right.
Flat and in the prairies.
Right. Do you have any memories of like what you did for fun? Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Oh, the things we did for fun. Oh yeah, we swam in the Milk River.
Okay.
The Milk River goes across the High Line of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Are you from Montana?
No, I'm from Idaho, but familiar with.
You know where the Milk River is. It goes starts there in Glacier Park. And goes up into Canada, comes back, and goes across the High Line of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dirty, polluted river. Every little town along the way was dumping their sewage in the river. And we swam in that muddy, dirty, polluted river every day in the summertime. We ran around town and out in the country with nothing on but our shorts. We were brown as Indians. We spent a lot of time climbing trees, shooting magpies.
Gophers.
Shooting gophers. We got our .22s out and shot frogs We built forts. We played baseball. We played football. We hated school. We spent our time getting in minor trouble. we didn't know how to deal with girls. That was a foreign subject. We knew that we eventually had to join the Army, which we did. Mm-hmm. All three brothers served in the Army.
At the same time, or were you in the Army at the same time, or was it at different
Different times, yeah.
Okay. And where did you serve in the Army?
I took my basic training at Fort Ord, California.
Okay.
And then I served time at Fort Eustis, Virginia. Then I went to meetings, weekly meetings, for 3 years, 3.5 years. I didn't learn anything of value being in the Army, but I enjoyed it. And Bob, my brother Bob, was a sergeant at Fort Lewis, Washington. He was a supply sergeant. My brother Dick was a pharmaceutical helper in Japan. All three of us missed the wars. You know, we missed the Korean War. We missed Vietnam. We were born at the right time. I got to be a corporal. Bob got to be a sergeant. I don't know what Dick got to be. Carol and I were down at Fort Ord, 3 years ago? We were down in California.
3 or 4, yeah.
Fort Ord doesn't exist anymore in California. It's a college campus now. And it started out as a military fort, and it ended up being a community college.
Interesting.
Which is sort of unusual.
When you were growing up in Glasgow, was there a large, or was there like a recognizable Irish community there, or were you kind of the only ones that you knew of?
Yeah, there was more of a Scandinavian community. The Lutheran Church was the biggest building in town. There was a Catholic community and a Catholic school. There were Irish. Yeah, there were some Irish. Yeah. But where I really ran into the Irish is in Anaconda and Butte. You're aware of that.
And when was it that you moved you move to Butte first and then to Anaconda, or is it the other way around?
We moved to Anaconda in 1974.
Okay.
Then I worked in Butte and watched the St. Paddy's Day parades for year after year after year after year. And had a lot of fun. Drank a lot of beer and wore a lot of green hats and went into the M&M and ate corned beef and cabbage. And you're aware of the M&M, are you not?
Not particularly.
The M&M is an Irish bar in Butte.
Okay.
And the M&M started back in the 1890s and kept going until just recent years. Now somebody has refurbished it and is reopening it again. It's a famous Irish bar in Butte, Montana. President Obama visited it during the campaign. Yeah. Oh, that's a nice, neat joke that they had the people in Butte had a picnic for President Obama, who was not yet president, up at Montana Tech. And now this is a story that could be an urban legend, but supposedly as Barack Obama and his wife and two daughters were, they were celebrating one of the daughters' birthdays.
Yeah, they were there for the 4th of July, so they had been to the 4th of July parade in Butte. Mm. And one of the daughters, I'm not sure which one, like you say.
Somebody made a cake for one of the daughters. Mm. And everybody yelled and clapped. And a Butte redneck came up to Barack Obama and said, "Well, you can't possibly be president. You're a black man." And Obama said, "I'm half Irish. Does that count?"
That's a good answer.
Now, whether that's true, whether that story actually happened, who knows?
It probably is, because I've heard him say it on TV.
Did he say it on TV?
Oh, there was a program. Well, I've heard him say it, but there was also a documentary one time just before St. Patrick's, and they did the DNA thing on a bunch of celebrities. And of course, this is, they did Obama's. And like you said, he does have
Irish. He's half Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And in my scrapbook upstairs, I got a picture of President Obama with a bunch of people from Butte, Montana. And there's quite a disparity there of one black man among all these white people. You know? And, but Barack Obama thoroughly enjoyed visiting in Butte. And, you know, I listened to his speech at the Civic Center. There were two speeches. One was Mrs. Clinton.
Hillary.
And what's her first name?
Hillary.
Hillary, yeah. Hillary Clinton. She spoke first. And then Barack Obama spoke. And the place was packed. You know, there must have been 5,000 people there. And
might have been more than that. I'm not sure how many that
God, the place
Civic
was,
Center holds, Jack. That Civic Center probably holds about 8,000, I would say.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Okay.
Well, you've been living in the Butte and Anaconda area for quite some time now.
Since 1974,
yeah. What kind of changes have you witnessed in the community around here?
What changes in
changes.
The community?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the changes have been dramatic. In 1980, the smelter closed. And when the smelter closed, they put, 1,200 people out of work?
Yeah, about that.
So we no longer, you know, we're in the Rust Belt now. There's no longer any heavy manufacturing in Missoula, in Anaconda or Butte. In fact, Missoula lost their big, you know, their stone container business too. I think they put about 200 or 300 people out of work in Missoula, maybe more. But we lost 1,200 jobs in Anaconda in 1980. Now, where did those people go? They left Anaconda. At one time, Anaconda had a population of 17,000. We're now down to 5,500.
About 10,000 county-wide.
10,000 in the county?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the second largest, it's the second smallest county in Montana, Deer Lodge County. Silver Bow County is the smallest. We're the second smallest county in Montana. If you looked at the map in the paper yesterday, we're continuing to lose population here in Anaconda.
Butte and Anaconda are unique in that they have consolidated governments.
Yeah.
The city and the county are one government. Okay. We were, most places have a city government, and then they have a county government.
We were the first county in Montana to consolidate our governments, our city and county government. Butte Silver Bowl was the second county to consolidate city and county governments. What were the reasons for consolidation? Well, why have two governments when you can have one government? You end all that duplication. You had duplication in road departments. You had duplication in
fire and policemen.
You had duplication in treasury departments. Mm-hmm. You had duplication in courts. So when you consolidated the city and county governments, you eliminated a lot of things you didn't need. And anyway, the good Irish of Anaconda voted for that consolidation in 1976. Carol, am I correct?
Mm-hmm. It went into effect in 1977.
Okay, the consolidation took place in 77. Now I say the good Irish of Anaconda, the city is predominantly Irish, and you look in the phone book and there's 89 Sullivans and
predominantly Catholic in Butte and Anaconda.
Yeah.
For like you say, when he lived in Glasgow, the Lutherans were more predominant because there was a lot of Scandinavians there. But you can go around Montana and you'll figure out which ethnic group they belong to, kind of by which is the largest church in that town.
Sure, yeah.
But, pick up any Butte or Anaconda phone books and you can read the map of Ireland, and we can do that if you want to, but that would take a lot of time. The question you asked, how has the town evolved in the last 30 or 40 years? Mm-hmm. We've lost population. Mm-hmm. We lost our industry. The people have moved away. We've lost our skilled technicians that worked at the smelter. Our tax base went down, cut in half. The city and county became very depressed. Young people don't live here. They go else, they go to other places that have jobs. There's no jobs except minimum wage jobs, and you can't make a living on minimum wage. So how has the town changed? Well, it's struggling to come back. There's a real struggle going on.
But it didn't become the ghost town that many predicted either.
At the
time when the smelter closed, a lot of people thought this town will just shrivel up and die, when that many people that worked out there depended on that smelter for a living isn't there, but that didn't really happen.
The other problem with the people that live in this town, they're very unprogressive. They don't like to see progress. And you're always fighting that attitude in this community. Now, regrettably, that's part of the Irish attitude in Anaconda. They don't want to see progress. They're very adamant against people coming into this community. And they refer to a person who's just moved into town as being a boomer. Carol and I are boomers.
A boomer.
Huh?
What does that refer to?
A boomer is a person who can't be trusted. A boomer is a person who...
And they came and they worked, but they might have only worked 2 or 3 months or 2 or 3 years, and then they were gone.
Mm.
They weren't dependable in that they would stay type thing.
But it's a very closed
community. But if you weren't born and raised here, you were considered a boomer. We've lived here since...
It's a very closed community. And one reason it's a very closed community is because of the Irish and the Catholics. You know, they don't want progress. And
But those are changing slowly.
Yeah, it's changing slowly. Now you asked again, what changes have taken place? Well,
for instance, he talks about the interaction there. Back in the day, probably in like the 30s and 40s, certain sections of town had certain nationalities living in a given area.
Here
there was an Italian section and a, as they call it, the Bohunk section and, you know, that type thing. And I mean, they said, you know, that sometimes if a young couple was getting married and he was Italian and we'll say Catholic, and he was marrying a little Scandinavian girl that was Lutheran. I mean, there was sometimes big arguments, you know, that this wasn't going to work and whatnot. Well, we don't really have those segments of town so much anymore. That
the ethnic community.
Yeah, the ethnic community. They honor some of the ethnic traditions and foods at given times. The pasty is probably the most famous ethnic food, but there's others like sarma. I don't know if you know what sarma is. It's kind of like a cabbage roll, except the cabbage has been soured like sauerkraut.
Mm.
So it's like a cabbage roll and wrapped in sauerkraut. you know, there's a lot of
Pavitica.
Pavitica, yeah, which is
Povitica is a P-O.
P-O-V-I-T-I-C-A, but depending on which country you're from, it's is how you pronounce it. There's it's pronounced Povitica, Pavitica, Povitica, but it kind of depends on which country you're from as to how you pronounce it, which is a sweet bread, and it's rolled out like as big as this table, very, very thin, and then they put a honey and nut mixture in it and then roll it up and bake it. It's really good, but it's very time consuming, and you know, but it's one of those old ethnic things.
The transformation, you asked what changes there have been in the community. One transformation is recreation. There are more recreational activities now, more tourist-oriented activities now in this southwest Montana. You know, I can name hunting, fishing, mountain biking, river rafting, skiing, downhill skiing, alpine skiing, hiking. The Anaconda Pinler Wilderness is one of the key hiking areas in Montana, just over the hill here. We've got a brand new Jack Nicklaus golf course that has been very popular with the people. We've got a new law enforcement building. So there has been some progress. But boy, it has really come hard to these people. And now you heard me criticize the Irish and the Catholics because of their their inability to accept progress. On the other hand, the Catholic Church has done a wonderful job in feeding people. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church promotes the food bank. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church promotes what's the name of that store downtown?
The Thrift Center.
The Thrift Center.
And a youth home for women.
And a youth home, too. Mm-hmm.
Called Discovery House.
Okay.
That's another thing that
is... But the Catholics can't take 100% of the credit. It's the Anaconda Ministerial Association, but mm-hmm. the Catholics have the largest... Mm. church membership, mm-hmm. so I guess, you know, but they were instrumental in getting all of that going, some mm-hmm. of the nuns.
Well, what I'm saying is the Catholics are very good at helping people in poverty, and mm-hmm. so you have to give them credit mm-hmm. there, you know. There's a lot of poor people in this town. Mm-hmm. The food bank is feeding 250 families.
Another thing that's changed here, again, not in Anaconda as fast as other communities, but at one time there used to be what they called corner grocery stores mm-hmm. in all the neighborhoods, and there were lots of corner bars in all the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, you know, Safeway and some of the box stores come in, and so that has forced some of those little mom and pop businesses out that were really prevalent.
Yeah.
Say in
yeah.
the 40s, 50s, and even to about mid 60s. Mm-hmm. And then the other stores started coming in, so then those all are out of business.
Okay, there's an answer to your question. The ma and pa grocery stores are gone.
Mm-hmm.
The corner bars are gone,
mm-hmm.
although there's a few left. The old time families are dying out.
Mm-hmm.
We live in the Italian section right here. But there are some wonderful names of ethnic groups, like the Puccinellis and the Menicucci's and, you know, all these wonderful ethnic names that are still in Anaconda.
Mm-hmm.
The Puccinellis had, 10 children, and the Menicucci's had
yeah.
8 or 10.
Each one of those had quite a few, too.
Who was the lady that you used to chat with when you worked for the law firm? The lady who came in demanding payment on her bad checks.
Oh, Mrs. Comodina.
Comodina, okay.
She had a little neighborhood grocery store.
Oh, she had a grocery store, did she? Yeah.
Yeah, down by where Albertson's yeah. is now. Just that street right across from the park. There's a looks like a little white house now. But
Comodino would be what? Italian?
Yeah.
Okay. Those are wonderful sounding names. You know? Comodina, Menicucci, Puccinelli.
Are there any kind of local gatherings or events that happen around here that have been going on for a long time?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, St. Patrick's Day is a biggie.
Yeah.
And that was just the other day. Did you guys do anything for St. Patrick's Day?
No, I stayed home.
Stayed home.
I worked at the food bank that
okay.
day. So.
The reason I stayed home is because when I drink, I get outlandish. It's best that I stay away from drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm an addictive personality.
Have you ever heard of mesopust?
Okay, now, the Hibernians,
mm-hmm.
the Hibernian chapter here was formed in 1885.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oldest Hibernian chapter west of the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
although the one in San Francisco could be older. The Hibernian building is on Oak and Commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What other kind of local events are they?
Yeah, just a second, I'll get you the.
What other kind of local events are they working with here in Anaconda? Other than St. Patty's Day, I guess.
You've got the Wayne Estes basketball tournament.
Okay.
Wayne Estes was a All-American basketball player from Anaconda.
Huh. Cool.
played for Utah State University. Was killed tragically in a electrocution. He ran into a down power line, got electrocuted.
Well, there had been a car wreck. A car had gone into the light pole, and he and a couple of his team members went over to try to help.
So they bring
he
in.
He was tall, and he hit the line.
So they bring in basketball teams from all over the country to play for the Wayne Estes basketball tournament.
And the AOH is organizes that, is that what you said? Hmm? Or the AOH organizes that?
No, it's just the Anaconda thing.
Okay. It's organized. Excuse me, who's it organized
Chamber
by?
Chamber of Commerce.
Chamber of Commerce?
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay, what else has there been?
The Mesopust is Mesopust.
Okay.
And it's a Yugoslavian holiday. Mm. Held on the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday of each year.
Okay.
And the community had, here again, Yugoslavia. A lot of those countries have changed names from when these people came here, but anyway, it's that area in Europe. Like I said, the locals call themselves Bohunks, but.
And that's another local event that happens here in Anaconda?
Mm-hmm. Huh. Cool. Which is kind of different. And they serve the Sarma.
Okay.
Which is the...
The St. Patrick's Day Marathon is the Sunday before St. Patrick's Day.
Saturday.
They run right by here.
Oh, yeah.
What did you say? What you call it something else. What? You didn't. Okay. Anyway, the St. Patrick's Day Marathon, 500 people running it, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe you've done it, huh?
No, okay. I've just heard of it.
It's sponsored by the Locker Room Bar. The Locker Room Bar is a bar where the Irish congregate, and also the Norwegians and the Germans and the and the English and the and the French and the
most small towns in Montana really support sports because that's sometimes the only entertainment. Now, when we lived in Shelby, the population of Shelby was only about 3,000, but they had a gymnasium that held 6,000. Because everybody went to the games on the weekend. That was about the only thing there was to do. So, you know, to allow for everybody in town to go, plus the neighboring towns, that when they would come and stuff, their seating capacity was bigger usually than the population of the town.
I guess I'm going to switch gears here for a little bit.
Well, anyway, you asked that question of how had the town changed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've got a steady stream of activities that are going on all the time. A lot of them sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. There's the dart tournament. The dart tournament is the largest dart tournament in the Northwest. All these drunken people get in bars and throw darts. And there's the horseshoe tournament. The horseshoe tournament brings in old geezers like me, you know, from all over this part of Montana. What else have we got? Oh, the shuffleboard tournament. The shuffleboard tournament is a biggie. The bowling tournaments. Bowling is a big
thing. a bicycle race too that goes out to Georgetown Lake and comes out at Drummond and then comes back up the interstate and back to Anaconda, and sometimes they reverse that order too. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
The St. Patrick's Day Parade, of course, is, oh, yeah, the, what's the name of that group, that of women, Carol, that?
The Irish Washer Brigade.
The Women's
Washerwoman's
Brigade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're a bunch of middle-aged women who dance to music, holding their scrubber boards.
Mm-hmm. The way you used to do laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And they dance to Irish music as they go down the street. And
it's kind of like a little drill team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've got to see them sometime.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And they have costumes. They okay. have little aprons on, mm-hmm. and these special little shoes and whatnot that they wear, and little hats.
Now, have you ever traveled to Ireland? You or any of your
no.
Has any of your family gone mm-hmm. back?
Yeah, Mike Gillooly of Billings
okay.
has been to Ireland.
Who is that in relation to you?
That would be my nephew.
Your nephew, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did he tell you any stories about it? Do you know where he went?
His mother told him to stay out of Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
you know, where all the fighting is going on.
Mm-hmm.
That was 20 years ago. Well, guess what he did? Being a defiant young male that he is, that's the first place he went. Northern.
Well, but yeah. his girlfriend at the time had a teaching internship over there, and that's where she happened to be, mm-hmm. and he kind of went to see her, so.
Gotcha.
Now Mike Gillooly is a policeman in Billings, Montana, head of the policemen's union.
Do you have any, family heirlooms? Any family heirlooms or keepsakes or anything like that that have been passed down?
Well, just a few photos.
Just
not
photos?
Much, and they're just the people.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of portrait shots. There's not any pictures like on the property they lived on or anything like that.
There's not much, mm-hmm. is there?
Uh-uh.
How about...
not from Ireland, I mean...
Nothing from
I've
Ireland.
I've got some things that belong to Jack's mother and grandmother, but they weren't, you know, Irish artifacts.
How about holiday traditions or anything? Are there any holidays that are celebrated in your family that have been celebrated in a certain way for as long as you can remember?
Well, we've always usually have corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a tradition.
Although we have that other times too, because we like
well,
it. I always buy a couple extras and put them in the freezer.
My dad celebrated... in a way.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member of SPEPSQA,
okay.
the Society for the Preservation of Barbershop Singing in America.
Oh, really?
Huh. And my dad loved to sing. And he
well,
joined...
So did your grandfather.
My grandfather loved to sing.
Yeah.
The Irish were a very musical bunch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were a very musical breed. And my grandfather would sing at the Catholic Church, then go over and sing at the Lutheran Church, then go over and sing at the Methodist Church,
mm-hmm.
and then go sing at the Lutheran Church, and then go sing at the Presbyterian Church.
He goes around to services because he liked to sing so well. So.
Yeah. My dad
would have him for the day. That's where he went.
my dad loved to sing too.
Mm. What kind of songs do you remember them singing?
You've got those songbooks in the bedroom there.
Um, There's a song called Samuel Hall.
Okay.
I don't know if you know that one or not. Oh, my name is Samuel Hall, Samuel Hall. Oh, my name is Samuel Hall, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Did your father sing to you when you were young? Yeah. Was that a form
of
entertainment?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, Grandpa used to sing to the grandkids, and he used to read stories to them. They just thought he walked on water.
My dad used to sing to my children, and they loved him, you know. That was an Irish tradition in our family, singing, you know, that music.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost it, you know. I can't even carry a tune, but Carol, my wife, will get those songbooks out for you.
Sure.
And,
So you, when you were young, storytelling and singing was kind of a form of entertainment at your house, would you say?
Yeah, we used to listen to my dad sing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is kind of on the other side of the family, the Hart side of the family. But they went to school in Wisconsin, and I had a bunch of campus songs. And things, and we had some pictures where they were all standing around a piano singing.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently at one time singing was kind of when you got together, that was kind of a thing you did. But I don't know where that Samuel Hall one was. Keep looking, you can look at those if you want.
Well, these came from the other side of the family, my mother's side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was your mother of Irish ancestry as well?
My mother was English.
English, okay. Okay. Let's see.
The Harts were from England, I believe. The Harts came over to America in 1637. They landed in Massachusetts. But we're supposed to stick with my side, I guess.
The Irish.
I won't get into that.
Oh, that's fine. So, I was wondering, what does your Irish heritage mean to you?
Well, it means that I'm part of the melting pot, the melting pot of America. In other words, I got to participate in the democratic institution known as America. It's been a wonderful experience being able to participate in the democratic process. Now, if I would have stayed in Ireland, you know, there wouldn't have been that opportunity. Or if my family had stayed in Ireland, there wouldn't have been that opportunity to participate in the democratic experiment. And I think that's what it's been, is an experiment. It doesn't always work too well, the democratic institution, but it's better than anything else. And the melting pot of America, we have become such a, how would you describe it, the Heinz 57 variety of American. We're not Irish anymore. We're, you know, I'm down to about what, 1/64th maybe Irish, 1/32nd. But to be able to participate in this wonderful country, this democratic society that we have, is what it means to me, and it's been a good ride, you know.
Now, if you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what do you think you would include?
For the
history of Irish in Montana, what do you think you would include if you were to write a history?
What you'd have to write about Butte and Anaconda, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to write about the Irish farmers that are all throughout Montana. Mm. You'd have to write about the Irish influence in Montana. Mm.
And what do you see that influence as being? What do you think the Irish influence in Montana is?
Well, they're a bunch of drunks. You know? The Irish are very inventive people. You know, they persevere. Mm.
They kept potato recipes popular.
They're very happy people. Mm. They're very congenial people. They're very friendly people. They do so many different things, like Carol. This is a recipe book that Carol wrote.
I didn't write it. I just collected recipes from the family, their favorite recipes, and typed them up and put them together in a book. But I mean, I didn't write them or make them up.
You know, the history of Montana is Thomas Francis Marr, mm-hmm. is certainly the history of Montana. Your boss Bernadette Sweeney, is that her name? Mm-hmm. She has to be part of the history of Montana. Dr. Bernadette Sweeney, is that her name? And, mm-hmm. I'd love to meet her. Is she from Montana? Or?
She's from Ireland.
She's from Ireland, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
The Sweeneys are all over this part of the country.
Yeah. Her husband's from Butte, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark Sweeney lives down the street here. The former football coach at Montana State University was a Sweeney. The Irish are everywhere in Montana. You know, that's the influence. You know, you like I told you, if you go down the phone book in Butte, turn it off for a minute.
Sure.
Let me count the Sullivans in Butte. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. Sullivan families in Butte, Montana.
Big influence.
Now give me another Irish name.
Oh gosh. I don't know. How about O'Connor?
O'Connor?
I had an O'Connor yesterday.
There's lots of Connors.
Connors.
Around. Here again.
11 O'Connor families in Butte.
Yeah. But here again.
O'Brien.
Some of those people dropped the O when they came to the United mm-hmm. States.
13, 14 mm-hmm. O'Brien families in Butte. Give me another name.
Count the Sweeneys.
Monahan. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Monahan families. McCormick. McCaughey, you know, Kennedy, there must be 10 Kennedy families.
There's lots of Shays.
Huh?
Shay,
okay. Uh-huh. Anyway, you get the point.
Lots of them. Well, great. I think that's actually about all the questions that I had for you. Did you want to speak to anything else? In, was there anything in your history? You do? Okay. Could we pause it for just 1 second?
I want you to interview my wife sometime.
Oh, sure.
On her Irish history.
Jack, I tell you, I don't know where they're from in Ireland or anything.
Well, yeah, but I can tell a couple stories, can I not?
I don't know.
Well, we're talking about a guy named Boonhelm. Boonhelm, who is related to my wife, mm-hmm. was one of the 5 road agents that were hung in Virginia City mm-hmm. in 1864. Boonhelm, among other things, was a cannibal. He ate people. That's why I look at my wife and I say, someday she's going to eat me. But anyway, Boonhelm killed, what, 24 people?
I don't know, because I can't find that book that I had that I had I'd done a tally on it, and it was in that book. I'll find it one of these days.
Okay, Boonhelm is buried in Boot Hill in Virginia City. After they hung him, they buried him in Boot Hill up there above. Have you ever been to Virginia City? Mm-hmm. Oh,
never.
Okay. Carol is related to Daniel Boone, the explorer.
Well, I don't know that that's Irish.
Huh?
I don't know that either one of those names are Irish.
Well, anyway, she's got a... Carol's got a wonderful Irish background. Yeah. You could interview her. You could interview her if you wanted to. And
we can put her on our list if she wants.
But you're not going to.
Well, I just don't, like I said, Jack, I know that you get back, but I have no idea where in Ireland, other than, like I said.
What county?
Well, we think Waterford, because there was powers there.
Okay.
But there could have been powers other places, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bryans, B-R-Y-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was lucky to find my great-grandparents, let alone anything beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all in the United States, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, the family came from Ireland. That's the important thing.
Yeah, but I don't know when or any of that. Any dates or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which county or anything.
Well, you thought it was County Mayo. Did you not?
No, I said Waterford is.
Oh, Waterford, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But my parents didn't know much either, you know. You got to remember, my mother didn't approve of doing genealogy. She wasn't going to tell any stories about the family.
Yeah. Her mother would say, leave those dead people alone.
Let them rest in peace. And I kept saying, I'm not trying to dig up dirt. All I'm trying to do is just get born and died and occupations mm-hmm. and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think your mother was afraid we were going to find a black person in the family.
Well, I don't know what she was afraid of, but...